been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And good morning and welcome to the Thursday, October 19th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, and sitting in for Bill today as we wrap up our visit to Detroit and the Bloomfield Hills area. Looks like markets starting off a little bit of a mixed bag and fairly flat. We've got S&P up 1.61 points. It's only 0.04% at the moment. At least it's green there. We've got the NASDAQ up 0.22%, 29 points to 13,344. And the Dow bringing up the rear today, down 0.11%, or just off 36 points to 33,628. We've got a little bit of a pullback in crude oil after a two-week high hit earlier this week, down 1.05%, right at $87.39. Gold continues to climb a bit here, even fighting off a strong U.S. dollar, up to 1954. That's up 0.37%, and all eyes have really been on the U.S. Treasury, which, after some economic data this morning, is sitting right at 4.93. So still pushing that five handle there, but only down 3 basis points. So it looks like today. But again, good morning and welcome to the Thursday, October 19th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, sitting in for Bill while we're on the road here in Detroit and on the heels of a big six to three Red Wings win over the Pittsburgh Penguins last night. Trip kind of culminated into us getting out and catching a hockey game, thanks to Bill and his generosity. So we had actually had a couple of first timers on the team go with us to the hockey game last night. Good news is there was plenty of goals. They got two fights. Two fights got in, and so it was a fun one, and at least baptized those two, I guess, correctly with in a hockey game and doing it in Hockey Town, USA. So we had a great time. It's been fun here visiting with folks here in the Detroit area, and of course, most of the week, the story kind of remains the same, where market is remains very focused on interest rates. The U.S. Treasury, as I said, continues to approach that five handle and really, you know, certainly defying gravity to a certain extent in terms of, you know, where we thought rates would be this time of the year here in October basically first month of the fourth quarter here. Earlier expectations would expected that that rate to be closer in the four range, if not even sub four. Doesn't seem too long ago, and in March of the banking crisis, pretty soon after SVB, right around March 7th, where 10-year was at around the 3.3 rate. So big move in the market. That's almost a 50% jump in the 10-year yield there, and also, as Bill's highlighted, the 30-year mortgage hit an 8% rate for a moment yesterday. That's the highest level since mid 2000. So rates continue to rise, which are going to have an effect on economic activity, going to have an effect on the velocity of money, how quickly money moves through the market, As credit rates go up, that also tends to reduce the amount of borrowing out there, which reduces the money supply, which in turn reduces the amount of dollars floating around in the economy, and eventually will have a detrimental effect on growth. And like I said, you had the highest mortgage rate, I think, in 23 years. Yesterday, when the 30-year hit 8, and you also had Treasury yields are hitting some of their all across the Treasury curve, whether it's on the short end or particularly on the longer end, has reached some of the highest levels we've seen really since 2006 and 7. And those biggest casualty there has been really bond mutual funds or bond ETFs. As we mentioned before, we're fans of holding individual bonds, and really each particular client has control of when one of those bonds gets sold. Unfortunately, inside of an ETF or a bond mutual fund, it's really up to your fellow investors who happen to be in the fund that are going to affect your bond holding, and those as they sell off. Even if you're okay holding those bonds for a particular purpose, you're still, as your fund is getting more redemptions, that is going to essentially those realized losses or those bonds that need to be sold to pay out those other shareholders are going to have an effect on your fund. And we've seen some of these bond ETFs. Saw yesterday we're really at 16-year lows. In terms of a couple of big ones are TLT, which you've heard us reference on the show before. That's iShares 20-year Treasury bond. That's filled up with a lot of the stuff that SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, owned whenever they went under early this year. TLT is it's as low as it's been since July of 2007. You've got TLH, which is basically a 10 to 20 year Treasury bond ETF, and it's lowest it's been since January of 2007. And then even on the like I said on the more intermediate term, 7 to 10 year note, that one's as low as it's been since April of 2010, and even in the 3 to 7 year number here is for Treasury bond, that's IEI. As low as it's been since May of 2010. So those you can see it really all across the Treasury curve. The U.S. two-year yesterday touched 4.24%. That's the highest it's been since July of 2006. So when you're beginning to blend some of those dates of 2006, 7, 8, 9, or going back to 2000. When you see those statistics that bring in some of those dates that were kind of triggering dates that you mark those marks in time where the market certainly overall market certainly struggled, it makes you want to peek at it a couple of times and just kind of get an idea of where we're at when you look at it from a historical standpoint. So pretty large moves in these rates, and that like I said, that's going to flow through to the economy. Yesterday we got mortgage applications. They fell certainly as interest rates were rising. Composite index for that was actually at a negative 6.9% versus positive 6.6% the week prior. The refinance index, pretty much refis are really pretty much dead at this point unless you had some short-term variable mortgage or something you need to make permanent. Refinance index was down almost 10% versus the week prior, and purchase index was down over 5.5%, 5.6%. And so when you look at those, any of those things that you want to purchase that are going to be interest rate sensitive are going to likely have a slowdown. We'll get into some Tesla earnings later in the show. But just talking to folks here in the Michigan area, you've you know, you've got prime borrowers for auto loans. You know, folks are seeing, you know, rates in the 7 to 11% range, and like I said, that's for prime borrowers, and of course that's far cry from the past where you get to buy a brand new vehicle and getting 6 years of 0% interest. Those things, at least in this particular rate environment, don't exist at the moment. So those are all things that take a long time to flow through the economy, and we're beginning to see those pieces there. But we're getting through got through the first quarter of the Best Stocks Now show, and we'll be right back and discuss some other thing happenings in the market. Welcome back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now show with your host today, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, serving as a relief captain for Bill on today's show. After busy 3 days of meetings here, getting a chance to meet some great people here in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, learned some interesting things about the city. A lot of folks, as you can imagine, that we met with have some tie to the auto industry, whether it's directly for one of the big three manufacturers here, or one or two tier supplier to the industry in all different forms or fashion. So, learned some interesting things about the city. Got in a photo in front of the famous Motown studio one evening. Bill wanted to do a little exploring, so we got that in. Of course, squeezed the hockey game in yesterday, and just had a wonderful time. Certainly thank all of those that came out to see us, and thank the team for putting it together for us. So looking at the markets here, we've got still somewhat of a mixed bag. S&P 500 is pretty much flat, down 3 points. That's a 0.07%. Dow's down a quarter of a point here, down to about 87 points. And the NASDAQ up 0.13% here. So got the NASDAQ in the green up roughly 18 points at the moment. Gold remains in the positive territory. And thankfully, from a oil standpoint, oil has given up a little bit of gain here, down to right at about 1%. So looking at some of these variables that certainly are providing headwinds for the equity markets, whether it's interest rates that Bill highlighted and an article came out I guess about 2 weeks ago now, but the two primary headwinds really for the market are things that needed to kind of ease in order for the equity markets to rise and build on those gains in the first half of the year. It's really interest rates in oil. Of course, as we mentioned, 10-year yield pushing, getting closer and closer to 5%. Obviously, that affects how much people pay for multiple of earnings, how much folks would pay for a dollar of earnings. We've seen PE multiples come down. Bill has shown that in the newsletter in terms of some multiple contraction. Market benefited from multiple expansion in the first half of the year. Like I said, one point earlier in 2023, I think the 10-year was at 3.3%. So we kind of think it should be somewhere in the middle of 3.3% and the almost 5% that we're at the moment. And then also you've got oil, a newer headwind, just in terms of with the ongoing conflict and war in both Ukraine and Israel. So particularly Israel and kind of the old risk premium being added back to a barrel of oil, particularly a barrel of Brent crude there. So those things continue to have effect. You know, you're looking to look and see where interest rates or multiple contraction has had the most effect. It's as we mentioned, it's always in those, you know, you see it first in those long, you know, quote unquote long duration stocks. And just a reminder, what we mean by long duration stock is simply something that, you know, you're invested in, and those earnings and cash flows are going to be likely off into the future, right? Whether it's, you know, 3 to 5 years, or, you know, who knows, maybe even longer. Company could never be profitable. You know, the fact is that those future earnings, you know, become worth less and less as interest rates go up, because you've got to discount those future interest rates back to today's dollars. And you're doing that at a higher interest rate, which adds up to lower value. And we've seen it. Actually, Kathy Wood had some remarks just in terms about her feeling that the Fed's making a mistake, and you know, these higher rates are going to eventually break something in the economy. I mean, you've got your Q3 performance so far as of things due yesterday, but S&P 500 is down about 3.6% during that time frame. You've got their flagship ARK Innovation Fund at Kathy Wood runs there, down 10.8%. So really, you know, kind of in correction territory for ARKK and some of the other ones. You know, there's ARKW down 8.6. The technology and robotics ETF of theirs, BAT, its symbol there's BATS, ARKQ. That's going to be, that's down 7.9%. The Genomic Revolution, which I always kind of need to remember what that one even actually invests in. That one's down 18.6%. So a lot of long duration in that fund, ARKG, and the fintech fund down 7.7%, space exploration down 9.3%. So, and you can see the effect that high rates, and especially a fast move, quickly moving you know, yield curve and quickly moving higher yields have really affected the performance, and particularly those long dated funds, and as we mentioned in the first part of the show, you know, bond funds with long duration have also got hit the most, as in that TLT of the 20-year U.S. 20-year rate that we kind of rattled off earlier, being I think the lowest it's been since 2007. So, and looking at the other side of the equation here, in terms of those headwinds that needed to cease a bit in order for the equity markets to get some traction and build on the gains from the first half of the year. The other piece of that equation, Bill mentioned, is oil. And we had a two week high yesterday or midweek as U.S. storage drew down pretty significantly. Much larger than forecast. We fell 4.5 million barrels. So someone's draining the oil can here in storage and here in the U.S. So that's not good for, obviously not good for supply. So we're supplies in the Cushing storage hub in Oklahoma at their lowest levels, since October of 2014. So supply issues mixed with fear and uncertainty in the Middle East have really kept oil prices elevated and likely will for some time until we get some bit of clarity over there. But we've pushed through the first half of the Best Stocks Now show. When we can come back, we'll get into some earnings and some economic data here that was released this morning. But we'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of the Thursday edition, October 19th, Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, Pointer and Analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, taking the wheel for Bill today as we wrap up our Detroit visit. We'll be getting out of town here later this afternoon / morning. And it looks like market-wise, it looks like everything's in the red now. We've got NASDAQ pretty much flat, down about down 3 points. S&P 500 down about 0.26%, and the Dow, for a change, bringing up the rear here today, down 0.41%. We continue to keep an eye on those interest rates and oil prices, as we mentioned in the first half of the show. But today, of course, it's Thursday, so it's initial jobless claims day. I remember when this kind of weekly report didn't get much fanfare, but of course, recently, I don't know if it's because it comes out every week or what here, but it's been certainly getting more eyeballs for a while here in the market. Kind of an interesting economic calendar. We had retail sales yesterday, day before yesterday. We had initial jobless claims today at 8:30, and they came out. We had the Philly Fed business outlook that came out this morning too, that we'll get to. We've got a total of seven Fed speakers, or Fed, one including Jerome Powell at Jay Powell at noon today at the Economic Club of New York, if anyone is in the area. But you've got the seven speakers. We even get a Fed balance sheet that comes out on at 4:30 today. That's always a kind of a scary report to look at. Particularly when you match that up with $33 trillion deficit, I believe, here at the U.S. From a budget standpoint, all of which has been, of course, having an effect on the market. So the reason that Fed balance sheet is important is because part of the Fed's job, if their balance sheet has grown significantly, particularly since COVID. And so they have been a net seller of U.S. treasuries. And so as they've done that, right, they're selling, putting more supply of treasuries out there, just as the U.S. Treasury has issued more bonds to continue to replenish their bank accounts after running those down during the debt ceiling debate in June. And so all of that continues to have a effect on rates. So it will be interesting to see the Fed balance sheet and see how quickly they are slimming that down. That my guess is that's going to play into kind of where we're getting in the U.S. 10-year in terms of getting closer and closer, potentially a 5% rate or higher there. And from Agnes, so the jobless claims, as you can probably guess by now, came in less than expected. The number of jobless claims dropped 13,000 to 298K, so it's just under that 200,000 mark. And I feel like analysts should just stop throwing numbers out on these for a bit of time because they continue to overshoot them. Estimate there was 212K, so we came in 15,000 jobs under what was expected. Of course, that all else being equal would have a little bit of puts a little bit of pressure on the upward pressure on the 10-year yield at the U.S. 10-year yield. And it looks like folks have been analysts have been waiting for some of the UAW strike data or job losses to flow in to the data, and we just haven't seen it. So I don't know what the lag effect is there or what the consensus reasoning is for those jobless claims not showing up yet. But it's a data-driven story, and it sometimes just depends on how how they use the data. So I guess one thing to talk about, at least from a job standpoint, is the 4-week moving average right now is right out of just over 205,000. Decreased 1,000 from previously, so that moving average continues to get pushing back towards 200,000. I think at one point it was in the 210 range. So one piece of the other piece of the I guess the important piece of the jobless claims today, and it's kind of a mixed bag simply because continuous claims, which we've been focusing on too, are continuing to rise and actually coming in over consensus. So these are folks that are out of a job or remaining essentially unemployed on continuous job claims. Came in at 1.734 million. The consensus number was 1.71 million. So that number actually continues to rise higher than consensus. So you kind of match those two numbers up, new claims with continuing claims, and you almost get kind of a mixed bag for this week's report, which you're really seeing, this is really what we're seeing in the bond market, because the bond market, for a change at least, seems to be a little quiet. At least it was when we first got on the show today. The U.S. 10-year sitting right at 4.95% today, so not a huge change, but like I said, getting closer and closer to that five handle number. Other piece that came in was the Philly Fed manufacturing rose less than expected. So this is one of those reports where you think bad news is could be good news for the market. That index, manufacturing index, came in at minus 9%, and was actually revised to minus 13.5% in September. Couple of interesting parts of this report was the always look at the CapEx index, right? So capital improvements, buying factories, right? That's going to be your capital expenditures index. That's actually came in down 4.8%. versus up 7.5% last go around. So, given when you've got high rates, right, it doesn't make sense sometimes to finance some long term project, right? So, in terms of when you're looking at cost benefit analysis, borrowing cost increase, which sometimes should we make the plan or not make the plan? Well, the return on investment when borrowing costs go up, some of those plants doesn't make sense to potentially build. So that's one piece I think is important. The other piece here is new orders. New orders were actually actually up 4.4 versus minus 10.2 prior. So those two numbers, CapEx and new orders, are kind of offset each other a bit there, but. That CapEx is that's essentially investing in future growth of the economy, and that's one I tend to look at fairly often, because that's where you're going to see potential lag effects, where it would have been higher, for example, higher interest rates for longer. It's going to make some of those projects not viable. And you're talking about projects that may come online, 4 or 5 years down the road and add to future growth. Well, if those plants aren't being built, right, that's going to be a potential headwind for growth in those areas. One piece, and Bill was doing the show solo mostly this week, but things, some stuff we were talking about on the sidelines was, really about the chip makers have been a little weak here, just with the overhang of some of the restrictions, obviously, that the U.S. has been announcing in terms of keeping certain types of chips out of the hands of China, and their potential use for AI and other sophisticated technologies. And so that's hurt names like NVIDIA this week, AMD, Intel. It's another future piece of future growth, right, that could may not be there for those particular chip names. So keep an eye on that. When we come back, we'll hit a couple of earnings, see what's happening underneath the market, and we'll be right back with the last segment of the Best Stocks Now show. Stay with us. Final segment of the Best Stocks Now show. We'll be wrapping up Thursday's show here, and also wrapping up our time in Detroit. And it's really been a great trip here, and certainly appreciate all the hospitality that we've gotten as we've probably met with 20-25 folks. And households while we've been here. So it's really been great to get out, and I know we've been on the radio up here for almost 2 years now, I believe, and really first time since COVID that we've been able to kind of get up here, and glad we were. So we plan on getting up this way hopefully a couple, 2-3 times a year, go forward basis. So want to kind of dive into a couple earnings reports here, a couple big ones we had. Taiwan Semi reported, one of the one of our large holdings. Also, Tesla reported yesterday after the close, and we'll get into some of that. That stock's off. My check was down like 4 or 5%. Same story as prior in terms of maintaining deliveries, upping delivery forecast, but. And of course, margins for Elon and Tesla have been getting squeezed a bit. Tesla really kind of Elon had some not so great comments about the Cybertruck and it coming to market, and it's really a volume game. And what we've kind of learned here. And our time in Detroit has really been, the volume is really the issue, right? In terms of EVs being profitable, we can argue and discuss, debate the usefulness of the technology on a go forward basis. But if you are building them, the problem is you need to build a lot of them to spread out those high fixed costs, and certainly your Boyds of the world, BYDDF out of China, and of course Tesla, really the volume leaders in this business, and their margins getting squeezed is only going to put more pressure on these other folks, whether it's Rivian or still any of the big three, Stellantis, Ford, or GM, not having, number one, you don't have the volume to spread out those fixed costs and make those things more profitable. In fact, they're losing money on a lot of those models, at least early on. And so, no volume, and with you know, the companies that have volume reducing prices, you know, it's really a tough road to hoe, I think, for some of these companies in terms of, you know, getting the business economics right. And that's beyond even, you know, what you're seeing with the UAW strike there. So both of those things are intertwined, but at the same time, you know, it's just kind of getting squeezed from both ends. Of course, like I said, Tesla's giving up some. Or actually, that's turned positive now. It was up. It was down 5% at one point. Let's see. It looks like right now it's up maybe a quarter of a point. So whatever. I guess Elon didn't talk too bad about Cybertruck. I guess they didn't take it that way, because problem is he kind of had some strong words in terms of the Cybertruck, and it really all was around volume. He said anytime you're bringing a complex product to market, and one you're trying to ramp that complex product, you're trying to ramp up production on, and basically he was kind of stating that, you know, that ramp up in production is going to be, you know, a year or two off from where maybe analysts first may have thought it was, or where it was going to be. Other than another report, Netflix, Netflix came out with a fantastic report, not one we own at the moment. We do own a Netflix bond, but they had some positive subscription ads. Beginning to get some revenue and make some headway in the, you know, old password sharing arena. So great report from Netflix. AT&T actually had, we tend to lean against AT&T here on the show. So we want to give them their due. They had a strong earnings report and actually guided higher for some cash flow going forward. So we've got to get AT&T there. Interesting in terms of some of the names that, you know, did well from an earnings perspective. Procter & Gamble had a decent report. Of all things, I think Philip Morris had a pretty decent report, at least, you know, in terms of their business. So we're seeing some interesting things there. Big holding for us, and something that trickles down to a lot of the other chip makers was Taiwan Semi. TSM had a pretty strong report, and they actually gave some guidance in terms of they announced a new plant that's going to be in Germany. They actually mentioned that the Phoenix plant was beginning to materialize and make get some momentum. They've hired a handful of workers. At first, they were having trouble, you know, finding skilled workers, and so they've CEO mentioned that they've overcame some of those challenges. And so it's just an interesting kind of take and look at that report, and it's a great extrapolation for some of the other chip names, given that Taiwan Semi makes chips for, you know, Apple, NVIDIA, AMD. And so it gives you kind of little insights into their business. But, well, it's a lot of things going on, a lot of things happening this week, as particularly from an uncertainty side in the Middle East. And I think as earnings season begins to ramp up and begins to unwind, Bill's going to get more and more insight into earnings growth this quarter and on go forward basis. So I certainly encourage you, you know, those that don't have it, go out there and get the newsletter. You can go to GundersonCapital.com. Got to sign up for a newsletter, or of course, if you'd like to, you know, like to meet with us, you can always give us a call, give Edie a call, and she can get you on our calendars. That number is 855-611-BEST, 855-611-2378. We're always here to be a resource, and I hope everyone has a great day, everyone. Stay well. Bye now.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.